Live across this big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment, presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today it's all happening. Madonna's had a kid. Paula Yates has been arrested. Another Howard senator has resigned. And Meatloaf's gone ballistic at an airport. Full details coming up, along with the Hansen report, a bad hair day for the Australian Army, and more conflicts of interest than you can count on the former assistant treasurer's fingers. We'll play Radio Gladiators, Pot of Shite, and our guests today are Australia's new Mr. Entertainment, Frank Bennett, and arts world guru, Leo Schofield. Yes, it's something for everybody. Coming up on the program that makes Meatloaf foam at the mouth, Martin Malloy. She'll be your shelter here at Martin Malloy. Good afternoon, everybody listening in right around the big brown land this afternoon. It's me, Tony Martin, and this bloke here. I'm saying he's as wacky as a New Zealand election, Mick Malloy.
Anything can happen. Don't take your eye off me.
What's going on over there?
No idea.
It's a traditional New Zealand election. All the votes have been buried in the ground. It'll be a good 6 months before they're ready.
That's about right.
But let's get underway because there's a lot to get through today. I think it's time for celebrities in the poo.
Yes, please.
Now, Gracie's been getting ready with the theme music. I need something like the Entertainment Tonight theme. Gracie, are you in position?
Yeah.
Give it a burn.
Oh, very nice.
Couple of notes out a bit, that, you know, towards the end.
I'd like to get a second one in there, see if we can get a harmony going. See if we can get another one, just a third above.
We'll wait till Harry Connick comes back on the show. Right. But listen to this. Paula Yates was arrested today. In connection with a drugs investigation, Yates went down the local cop shop voluntarily and is understood to have told the police the suspected drugs found at the home she shares with Michael Hutchins, quote, must have been planted. Who would possibly have something to gain by planting drugs at Paula Yates' place, Mickey?
Let me think.
It's a stumper, isn't it?
No.
Who would have a copy of the front door key and a relationship with the nanny? I mean, it's a job for Hercule Poirot, isn't it?
It's a mystery, Tone. It's a mystery.
The alleged opium was apparently found by the nanny, as we know, hidden in the bedroom in a packet of Smarties. And, Mick, nobody has yet explain to me why the nanny was fishing about in the bedroom for Smarties.
I know.
That's the question that's going unanswered here. I mean, you know, what kind of desperate chocoholic have they employed? Hold on to your teddy bear biscuits, kids. Here comes the nanny. And there's only two options in this case, isn't there? Either the drugs were planted or it's a wacky old time come Easter around the Yates pad. All the kiddies charging around the backyard looking for the Smarties, getting stuck into them, going all quiet for a bit, and then achieving a level of spiritual awareness where finally their own names make sense to them. Now, while we're talking names for the young folks, sounds like Paula Yates may have been on the blower to Madonna, who's dropped a toddler this morning. Caught me unawares. I wasn't expecting it. I knew she was going to release it in time for Christmas. But don't worry if you did miss it. The whole thing should be out on home video by the end of the week. In Labour with Madonna is on its way, featuring a fantastic delivery room cameo from Kevin Costner, who describes the birth as neato, unquote. It was a spectacular birth, Mickey. Flash pots, a laser light show.
Yeah.
I hear Madonna was wearing the little headset and microphone, barking out orders to four black male nurses in bicycle shorts. But the result is a girl, and the name is, are you ready for this? Lourdes. You know, even a trip to Lourdes ain't going to rid you of that one. That is an incurable name. Madonna predicts her daughter will be a child prodigy. She says young Lourdes will be walking by 9 months and voguing by 10. Here's my prediction. You won't find one newspaper tomorrow, people, that's not running with a headline, Madonna and Child. You wait. You'll see that up behind your newsreader evening in a little box. Now, getting back to celebs in the poo, have you heard about Meatloaf?
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday, Meat was forcibly restrained by police after allegedly becoming violent and abusive at Melbourne Airport. Well, we've all done that, haven't we, at some point. An ANZAT spokeswoman says Loaf unleashed a tirade of abuse at ANZAT staff after being told he could not take baggage aboard an Adelaide-bound flight because it was too heavy. Just quiet me. Hear that? That's the sound of people at home already coming up with their own jokes for this one. Shall I continue?
Go on. Apparently, after 4 hours on the Stairmaster, the baggage in question was, yes, still well over the accepted limit.
G'day, Steve Bedwell here. Do you fancy rubbing shoulders?
That's Mariah Carey, always beat my baby here at Martin Malloy. That was true what I was saying about Meatloaf.
He's gone spack up.
Out of today's papers, he started throwing his weight around, said one airport staffer. He kept saying, which one of you Nancys won't let me take my bags on this flight? And said employing Nancys now, are they?
Oh, I don't know about that. Well,
who does he think he is?
He thinks he's Meatloaf.
He thinks he's Meatloaf.
And he might be right. What have you got for us, Mick?
Well, in what is believed to be the first legal challenge to the short back and sides Defence Force tradition, Tone, a corporal has taken the Air Force to the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission. The 25-year-old technician based in Wagga Wagga.
Is this true?
Yes, I swear it's true. They're in everything at the moment, aren't they? Our old buddy's in Wagga Wagga.
See what I'm going to do, Mickey? I'll make this pledge now. Just to keep our friends in Wagga Wagga happy, we've got Leo Schofield, the arts guru on the show. I'm going to see if I can get him to say Wagga Wagga.
All right.
We'll see what happens.
You see if you can do that. The 25-year-old technician told the commission yesterday that females in the RAAF were allowed long locks, but males were not. Now, these separate grooming standards discriminated against men, claimed Corporal Trindorfer. Hey, that's enough now. Settle down, you lot. Come on. Can't go around poking fun at a bloke's name. Anyway, Corporal Trindorfer. Right. One more outburst like that and everyone stays back after the show. I mean it. Big smacks for everyone. All right. Now, the Corporal has asked the Commission to order that the female standard be adopted for all personnel. Mm. He argued that long hair on men was generally accepted and that, personally, he felt that if he looked his best, he would perform at a higher level.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's just lovely, isn't it? Good on you, buddy. Well, let's just pray that when those Asian hordes come swarming down from the north, you're not having a bad hair day. Oh, no, I couldn't possibly go into battle like this, Sarge. Look at me. My hair is so dull and lifeless. Can we delay that beach landing 5 minutes while I put it up in a bun? Hey, Davo, can you lend me a scrunchie? Is that what we want from our frontline troops? When we move our forces into enemy territory, do we want them to look like hard-assed Marines or someone who could make the Statue of Liberty disappear before mincing through the Great Wall of China? Why don't we change the uniform to no shirt and jeans? Then we could be led into battle by the lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm telling you, Tone, it'd only take one bloke on barracks to turn up with a beehive, and next thing you know, everyone would want one. Hardened soldiers will be turning up at the salon demanding the same haircut as Jennifer Aniston from Friends. What is going on? Were the rats of Tobruk sitting around for months on end lamenting the damage being done to their roots by the sun's harmful rays? Were our diggers on the Burma Trail and WW2 constantly looking at the fuzzy wages going, I like what you've done with that? Have we ever had a tank commander who's won the respect and admiration from his troops, not just because of his bravery in battle, but because his hair is remarkably similar to Elaine's from Seinfeld? No is the short answer. You know, I've always thought short back and sides was mandatory till now, but I don't know. Maybe they're all just gone for the Sinead O'Connell look. I don't know too much about this Corporal Trindorfer. Not now, Gracie, not now. But I will say this. I'll bet you he sits down to go to the latrine. That's right. They asked him in the article if he thinks anything will come of his legal action. And you know what he said? You know what he says? Well, it won't happen overnight, but it will happen. Now, Gracie.
Radio Gladiators is coming up. Call us now on 1-800-657-657 on the new SAFM.
That's Dishwalla counting those blue cars here at Martin Malloy.
It's 1996 and the winds of change are blowing through the tiny South Pacific nation of Australia. And who's creating this wind? Why, none other than lucky independent member of Parliament, Pauline Hanson. Over 99% of Australians agree wholeheartedly with Miss Hanson's refreshing viewpoint, as evidenced by the nearly 100 people who turned out to hear her speak at a recent rally on the Gold Coast.
I think she's fantastic, and you know she's speaking for 99% of all Australians.
Really? How did you arrive at that figure?
Well, me and my wife and Elsie, who lives across the road, conducted a poll.
In your neighbourhood?
neighbourhood? No, amongst ourselves. And we discovered that a staggering 99% of...
The three of you?
Yes, agreed with Miss Hanson's controversial yet right-thinking views.
So you'd describe yourself as a supporter?
Yes, absolutely. I think she's a breath of fresh air.
And tell me, what do you actually know about her?
Well, I know she hates the bungs and the slopes. That's enough, isn't it?
So what's your...
Sorry, can't talk. Time for midday.
Australia's Aboriginals have long since prospered at the expense of the white population. While most white Australians barely have 2 cents to rub together and struggle to exist in their corrugated iron shanty towns, the black population live it up in their two-rack and double-bay mansions with their BMW motorcars and endless long lunches at all the fashionable restaurants. And who puts the bill for their extravagant Aboriginal lifestyle? Why, as always, it's Mr. White Man getting the short end of the stick. Thank goodness for the common sense of Pauline Hanson as she flits about the country speaking candidly off the top of her speech, which has been prepared for her by a friend of Graham Campbell.
I think she's right. I mean, I don't mind the Aboriginals and the Asians. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg, I think she was very good hosting the Oscars. But you wouldn't want to run into her down the bowls club, would you?
Outrageously, many people who migrate to Australia haven't the decency to fully master the Queen's English. And only Pauline Hanson has the temerity and wherewithal to condemn them and demand their deportation.
Well, again, she's right. I mean, these foreigners, they don't understand what we're saying. I mean, they wouldn't know what an abo is, or a slope, or a yip, or a jippo. They just stare at you blankly. I went up to one of them in Safeway the other day. I said, you, slant eyes, haven't you gooks been listening to Pauline Hanson, packy, packy, rickshaw and go home? And you know what? He didn't understand a word I was saying.
But it's not all work and racial purification for Pauline. There's family values to be maintained. The tireless Miss Hanson is a firm believer in maintaining family values, and so are her two ex-husbands. Bravo, Miss Hanson. You're the unofficial Australian of the year. The year, 1956.
Better music.
Better
music.
SAFM now playing better music for...
Lords' mum. Here on Martin Malloy, we're in the next hour. Well, it's a cornucopia in the next hour. First up, Leo Schofield's going to be in here.
Beautiful.
He's the artistic director of the, the Melbourne Festival at the moment. He's done every arts festival in the country at one point.
He's hoard around.
We like to have the grown-ups in from time to time, see if we can class up the program. Also, Frank Bennett's going to be here.
Yeah.
You know Frank.
He's a crooner.
That's right. He put out that single, a sort of Sinatra-y kind of version of Creep, of the Radiohead song Creep. We played that on the show. Very favourable response. He's got a new one out. Yeah. He's done Pearl Jam's Better Man.
Of course he has.
We're going to get him to sit in on Pot of Shite, and we'll take the record for a spin,
lovely,
as they say. In the next hour on Martin Malloy, also Radio Gladiators is coming up, and I'm just turning my attention to Canberra. Mickey, you can't take your eye off the capital for a minute. One day after the Get Shorty affair, John Howard has another resignation on his hands. Parliamentary Secretary Senator Brian Gibson. Heard of him?
Not at all.
They're going to sack everybody you haven't heard of in that government until there's no one left. He's resigned today after admitting that he unknowingly breached the ministerial code of conduct by owning shares in Boral Limited. Having an interest in a company with the word bore in its name would probably constitute a conflict for any member of the Howard government, but in addition to Shorty and Gibbo, calls are continuing for the resignation of Industry Minister John Moore, also found to be in possession of shares which may bring his impartiality into question.
He could go. I haven't heard of him either. He'll be gone in no time.
Don't get too famous. Also found to be in possession of shares. So I reckon the Governor-General, he's just going to have a revolving door installed at Government House. He's just sworn in a new Assistant Treasurer. There's pictures of that in the paper today. He'll have to swear in a new parliamentary secretary tomorrow. Mm. Now he may have to swear in a new industry minister. He must be swearing all day, old Bill Dean. Won't be able to hear yourself think for swearing up the Governor-General's place. But is that how the ALP are going to unseat the Liberals? Just go through their share portfolios one by one? They're knee-deep in shares, these Liberals, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
I saw Jim Whaley's finance report last night. It was just industry minister down 4, parliamentary secretary up 3, assistant treasurer holding well against the nickel, treasurer's wife up 2. Jim Short, meanwhile, has issued a brief statement regarding the share ownership guidelines. He says the guidelines need to be looked at.
Yeah, that's right, Jimbo. Maybe you should have had a look at him about 6 months ago.
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment.
It's Martin Malloy, where it's time to, well, visit Canberra once again for an edition of this.
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Because the financial disclosures from Canberra keep on coming, Mickey. Mm. As you know, there's a lot of talk about John Howard's wardrobe. His $8,500 wardrobe.
Mm.
Even the makers of the most expensive designer wardrobes can't work out what kind of wardrobe costs $8,500?
The only thing I can think of is it's got a false bottom and it's chockers with high-grade heroin. Sniffer dogs valued it.
It's chockers with shares, probably. It's chockers with former members of cabinet.
It must be made of higher quality wood than the Prime Minister himself.
Well, no one can work out the wardrobe. I'm just looking down here because there's quite a few more spending analysis. Listen to this. It costs us $102 million. That's going a bit far. $1.2 million in travel and, I think, staff expenses, because we're talking security, obviously, to maintain our 5 XPMs.
How much is it costing us?
It's costing us $1.2 million. To keep them in little drinks with umbrellas and...
How expensive are incontinence pads? I mean, $1.2 million? What are they doing?
They're
buying scalp tickets to midday?
Buying wardrobes, that's what they're doing.
Buying wardrobes. They need somewhere to keep their full-length rubber fish suits.
They're always down at IKEA. But we're talking, of course, hockey. We're talking Paul Keating, we're talking Fraser, we're talking Goff, and we're talking John Gorton.
Now, are they travelling around together?
Oh,
or are they splitting up to spend all this? I thought they were touring together. Didn't they have some kind of manpower-style show? XPM power? Weren't they touring the country at some stage?
They're like the Rat Pack. And I think what this is all leading to, I think today we'll ask for people to call us up with a brush with a former Australian PM.
That'll be good.
One of the big five, Gorton, Hawke, Keating, Fraser... And the other one, Whitlam, of course.
Whitlam.
And we'll accept Harold Holt. Can we accept Harold Holt? I think we will.
There won't be much to say, but...
They have to be real. We want to know what they're doing. What are they spending this money on? Are they on the spend? Are they down there at the milk bar going, I want 1,500 of them. I want 1,600 of them. What are they spending? We want you to call us up and tell us where you've seen a former Australian PM. Don't make it up. We want real stuff.
Yeah.
And what they were up to. Mm. Anything. It can be mundane. It can be irrelevant. It can be trivial. That's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a brush with a former PM, Mick?
Well, I have. I haven't had a brush with a former PM. I had a brush once with Gough Whitlam when I was young, but he was actually still in power.
Oh, yeah.
And now this occurred because my father at the time was flying aircraft for the VIP squadron of the RAAF, and actually flew the Prime Minister around at the time. And I remember once at Fairburn Air Base in Canberra, as a little un, my dad took me to meet the Gough Whitlam as he was coming off the plane. And as he was about 20 yards away, Dad said, "Say over there, that man is the Prime Minister of this country." And I'm just having a bit of a laugh. I've actually gone the boo. As a kid, I was just knocking around, a boo. And I've got the shortest, sharpest backhander that started only 2 inches out from my right ear, but I can still feel it now. I got told in no uncertain terms, you do not, the Prime Minister of our country, you will show him ultimate respect whenever or wherever he goes. Do you understand me, my boy? I'm going, oh, yeah, well, I've just learned a hard lesson. Later on that night, I'm at home, and I swear this is true. After a few ales, my father rocks into the house holding the toilet seat. He's ripped out of the F-28 going, "Hey, we're going to put this on the dunny, and we're all going to sit on the same seat as our Prime Minister."
Did you give him a clip round the ear?
Oh, I tried, but, you know, a bit hard.
Well, there you go. I think that's a brush with a former PM.
It was. Although he was the PM at the time.
And did your dad let Gough come up and see the cockpit?
I'm sure he did.
That's true.
My dad has actually got that
toilet seat
at home, and he hasn't mounted. I swear to God, and underneath it, he has the names of everyone who sat on it while he had the plane, and it's incredible. The Shah of Iran.
Really?
You didn't know that, did you? Prince Charles. I've got them all. I'm dusting for Prince.
Frank Sinatra.
He did it.
The Four Tops. They've all used it.
I'll bring it in. It's an hilarious collection of names.
Well, I don't think I can go one better than that. So I think we might go straight to the prizes. And, Gracie, if you could, just take to the organ.
There you go.
And what the hell is this? Let us know. When you find out, we've got, a copy of the new Blackadder Christmas Carol video. We've got Wallace and Gromit's A Close Shave. I know I've been probably gushing off like some John Michael Housen figure for the last week about these Wallace and Gromit films, but you've just got to see them. And you'll also go into the draw for, well, you and three friends heading to the Galliano Sambuca Singles Parties at Club Med Numia. And you know what? We're going to get that toilet seat off Mick's dad. And we're going to fit it on the plane that's taking you there. And that's going to make it a hijinks intensive visit, I assure you. Call us now with your brush, your real brush, with a former Prime Minister of Australia. 1-800-657-657.
Martin Malloy. Damned if I know what they're on about. On the new SAFM.
First flight.
Right.
After partying all weekend in Perth, and then fly on to Canberra.
Okay, and what sort of...
Flying in a falcon.
Yeah, in a little falcon jet, you know.
Okay.
What sort of state was Hawkey in?
Well, I don't know. I went over there nonchalant to have a look at him sort of thing, standing on the tarmac, and well, I gave him a little wave as he ran from one plane to the other, and he just looked at me like he does over the top of his glasses sort of thing. But he didn't have his glasses on. He just, you know, head down and sort of frowned at me.
He didn't have one jacket on over the top of another jacket, did he? Last all the footage I've seen of him in Perth, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, probably, eh?
And was there ever any evidence of overspending in your view?
Well, I think overspending, flying him around everywhere is a bit overspending,
right,
isn't it?
Because I remember when he came into a radio station, I was working a couple of elections back, he had one of those giant fur coats like Jason Donovan. Oh, yeah. I thought that was, you know, a couple of women on either arm.
Oh, not a good look.
James Brown style, a little bit extravagant. Okay, thanks, Eric. No overspending at this point, I don't think. Let's see if Bernadette's got something. Are you there, Bernadette?
Yep.
You've had an encounter. Who was it with?
We met Paul Keating.
Ah, Paul Keating.
Whereabouts?
In the Solomon Islands.
Have his hat with beaks on it?
No.
What was he doing?
It was the Pacific Forum there a couple of years ago.
Oh, where he got to wear that outrageous shirt.
Yeah, I think so.
And what was your encounter?
The Australian Army was building, or Navy was building a construction thing, and we went down there to see him because we knew he was going and all this, and yeah, so we went down there and met him.
Did you get your photo taken with him?
Yep.
Did he sign it for you?
No.
He didn't?
No.
Gee whiz.
Well, he's not spending up on ink. And you didn't see any extravagance on display?
They had, like, balls and that for him, but that was for everyone.
Balls?
Oh, well.
There you go. Okay, I think
they're just littered with hidden costs.
We're getting somewhere now. Let's see if Graham can help us out. You there, Graham?
Yeah, certainly am, guys.
Who'd you run into?
Bob again.
Oh, Hawkey, what is he doing this time?
I think he flies around everywhere. He was at a bit of a shindig for Mick Young Jr. in Adelaide a few years back.
Yes.
Been very, very careful not to be seen drinking, and I think he's probably making up for it now, isn't he?
And were you following him around just seeing if he had a couple of sneaky little mini bar bottles in the sleeve, that kind of thing?
I think I was actually making up for him.
Right. And did you say hello to Hawkey?
More than once.
And what did he say back?
He grunted a few times, and then he actually realised that I was part of the party, and he had to couldn't get away from me.
Oh, that would have been fun. Just dogging Hawkey all evening.
Tagging after him.
And was he into any hijinks at the party? Did you see any pranks, any stunts?
Unfortunately not. I was kind of looking forward to seeing him, see whether he wouldn't have wanted to play a bit of cricket and try and hook a bouncer or anything, because I was a quick bowler in those days.
Oh, yeah. See if you could get him in the head again.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Graham. Now we've got Carmel. Carmel, have you run into somebody? Who is it?
Yeah, John Howard.
John Howard, but, he's not really a former Prime Minister.
Yeah, but he will be soon.
I see.
It won't be long at all.
You think he's going to have to demand his own resignation when he checks out what he's got in the bank?
Well, I think so, and as part of this sort of money being spent on them, I think every cent is towards a good cause because he needs all the help he can get. So whatever money's being spent on him, it's not enough.
And where did you run into John Howard, Carmel?
At the Commonwealth Games in Brisbane. I was on the VIP monorail. I was the sort of hostess and I was putting them on and off the monorail and we got into a conversation.
How'd it go?
Not good.
Really?
Not good at all.
What happened?
Well, I was really, really nervous and he said to me, oh, well, where are the monorails being made? And I just went blank. And on the side of one of the monorails was this word called, well, Siberia was written. And I just said, Siberia. And he looked at me, you know, that famous look like, you idiot. And I sort of went, well, at least I'm not the only one here, huh? You know, I'm thinking this in my head. I didn't say that. And I sort of thought, well, you know, I wouldn't worry about my image. I'd start worrying more about your own.
Gee, where are the monorails made? That's the kind of sparkling conversation you get with the PM.
Well, what do you say?
And
none of your business, boy.
Well, I wanted to.
It's good to know that monorails are made in Siberia. Yeah. That's what they've got them doing over there.
Hey, I just work here, buddy.
Oh, you know, all these thoughts were going through your head, but I was trying to be very polite.
Was he spending anything?
He wasn't spending any of his money, and I'm not saying any more.
Okay, well, thanks, Carmel. We're getting nowhere. We've yet to, I think, illuminate a single outrageous spend. Have we got David? Are you there, David?
Yeah.
What did you see? Who was it?
Paul Keating.
Whereabouts?
Down at Bunnings.
Bunnings Warehouse, a kind of, for people in different parts of the country, sort of a Mitre 10 kind of arrangement.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was he doing?
I'm not really sure. He was holding a pair of secateurs.
They're not cheap. They are not cheap.
The good secateurs. And what was he doing with them?
I don't know. He was asking some guy that worked there what to do with them, was I?
Right. I see. So our former Prime Minister didn't know how to work a pair of secateurs. Mm. That was where he went wrong. I always said that about him.
Was he bouncing up and down on a tramp at the time?
No,
he wasn't. But he had a pair of secateurs and he looked like he was going to buy them, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's an outrageous expense.
Okay. Oh,
sorry.
Now we're getting somewhere.
All right.
Let's see if Kim can boot this thing home. You there, Kim?
Yes.
Who did you run into?
Bob Hawke.
Hawkey again, and he gets about, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Was he flying?
No, he was at home.
And what happened?
Oh, I used to be a paper boy at Rose Bay.
Yeah.
And my boss said, oh, we've got a new client. So on my way up, he said, be a bit careful about this one. So like, not realising who it was for, he said, have a glance. So I popped it over the fence, and there was a bit of a reaction. So I didn't know whether I hit him or just startled him, but I looked under the fence and it was Bob Hawke standing there.
It was Hawkey, and where did you hit him?
I don't know. I think it either might have hit him on the shoulder or just startled him.
Right. You didn't hit his hair and shatter it, did you?
No. But as I glanced underneath the door, I think I caught a glance of some fluffy slippers.
Oh, that's outrageous.
Oh, they wouldn't have come cheap.
Those fluffy slippers would have been coming out of you and I's pocket, McMalloy.
There's your $1.2 million right there.
Is that our winner?
That's our winner. All right. So anyone who's approached a former Prime Minister of this country and smacked him in the head with a rolled-up newspaper is a winner of something on this segment.
Yes, you've got yourself a couple of comedy videos and you've gone into the draw for the trip to Club Med Noumea. Kim?
Oh, thanks.
It's not Kim Beasley, is it?
No.
All right, just checking. Thanks for taking part today. There it is, another illuminating round of Radio Gladiators. We'll be back in the next hour. We're going to go all classy and cultural on you people. Frank Bennett, lounge singer extraordinaire, is with us, and Mr. Art, Leo Schofield.
This is Martin Malloy.
I hate this. I like to torture him.
Brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment.
Hi, this is Cap.
And in this hour of Martin Malloy, Mr. Entertainment, Frank Bennett joins us for Pot of Shite. Mick goes for a yodel, and next up we're going all highfalutin with Arts Festival kingpin Leo Schofield. All thanks to Coca-Cola, it's the ultimate summer refreshment. Rembrandts, it's Martin Malloy, and it's time to meet our guest. Mickey, this bloke, he's done every job you can do in the arts. He's just finished teeing up his third Melbourne Festival, which is happening right now, believe it or not, in Melbourne.
Mm.
So Melbourne's bid for the Melbourne Festival was successful.
Yep, got it again.
Okay. He's worked with orchestras, operas, commissions, committees. He just can't get enough. art, and when he gets home after a long day, he throws some spaghetti down on the floor and rolls about in it pro hard style. Then he eats it and reviews it because he's also done his time as a restaurant critic. Let's get him in here now and see if he can class up this little show. Look, kids, it's that Leo Schofield. Leo, thanks for dropping by today.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've been enjoying you guys on telly for so many years. It's nice to confront you.
Yes, we've made it to radio, and I think the next stage is theatre restaurants. That's
absolutely
where we're heading for.
I think they're ready for a comeback. I really do. I think it's the moment will come.
Now, Leo, I can't help but notice you're a fairly big bloke. Is that useful as an arts administrator? Do you need to throw your weight around? Does it end in fisticuffs at all?
No fisticuffs, but I do think if you have a kind of imposing presence, you can actually sail in and people take notice of you. I keep contemplating at various times what it'd be like if I was 2'3" or whatever. Right. Just 1 metre tall. I doubt that I'd get something like the attention.
Now, I suppose nobody exemplifies the battle between Sydney and Melbourne, if indeed it does exist, or, you know, we're always talking about it, is a media creation or not. But you've been right in the thick of it. You've been hated by both sides.
Yeah.
What's going on?
But I just love the idea of commuting and attempting to the healing process, mm-hmm. if you like, between the two cities. I mean, I tell people in Sydney how nice it can be in Melbourne. I tell people in Melbourne that Sydney is not really kind of a latter-day Sodom.
Now, Leo, we go to such places as Wagga Wagga. What say someone in Wagga Wagga has just heard you talking about arts festivals and said, let's have one here. How do you go about setting one up? Where do you start? Where do you get the axe from?
Well, I think the first thing you have to decide is whether there is something that you can do in Wagga Wagga that is unique.
Okay.
I mean, there is, after all, a festival in Australia called the Annual Coal Shoveling Festival at Fingal in Tasmania. And they do that because there's been a tradition of coal shoveling in Fingal.
Right, right.
So I think you'd have to work out what Wagga's traditions were and attempt to amplify those. But Melbourne has always had this feeling of being a city where there was action and culture going on, so it's just simply an amplification process. Tamworth always had a country music culture, so I guess that was the logical place for rather than Canberra.
Do you ever get out for a boot skirt, Leo, just out of interest?
No, but I watch it. It's very skillful, but I have these my ankles are very heavily insured. You know? So I have to do a lot of tapping when I get into those corporate boardrooms for sponsors. So it's like the pianist's hands. It's my ankles.
Now let's talk ticket prices. What are they starting at? What are they going to? Because that's one criticism of festivals.
Not ours, no. I mean, I've had a lot of crap thrown at me, but not that one about ticket pricing, because we deliberately cut the price under what people would normally pay. I mean, at the top end, it sounds like a lot of money, but compare it to Mick Jagger's Viper Room or whatever. What was it? Voodoo Lounge.
Voodoo Lounge.
Viper Room or something else. The Voodoo Lounge show. I mean, you know, quite, you know, modest people went without food for 2 weeks to go and buy two tickets to those shows. Yep. The opera is the top ticket at $140. You'd pay probably 150 quid in England for that, about 300. But way down, you can go to a concert for $10.
Yep.
And then there's $1 million worth of free entertainment out in the street.
Well, yeah, we're not talking street theatre. Tell me you're not talking street theatre.
But it's not the sort of street theatre you think it is. Now, let me tell you, we're talking window theatre.
Okay.
There's a group called the Urban Dream Capsule, and they're going to live for the 17 days of the festival in Myers-Burke Street window. They'll perform most bodily functions there. There are a few that have been declared off-limits. But they're going to eat and drink and go about their normal daily work. Five guys with bald heads in those five Myers-Burke Street windows.
Right. And, well, I hope no one brings their kids early for the Myer Christmas windows, because,
well, this is a bit early for them. But,
dear.
But it's a great tradition of animated windows, you know. Yeah. But these are sort of rather larger humanoids.
Is there a real good punch on around day 15? Does it lead to something?
Well, I think it's leading. I've got to have tea with them in the windows one day, and I know Denise Drysdale's going to make a visit.
Leo, most of your festival work's been a success. Have you ever been involved in a total debacle, a disaster?
I just met a couple of turkeys, but, you know, they're best. You just chop the heads up and eat them. I mean, nobody can hit the right button all the time, but and some things that you think are going to be just absolutely runaway successes aren't, and things that you think, well, I'm putting this on, it is a major risk. We've got a Welsh company coming in. I've met one person who's ever heard of this company, which is called E-Cumney. It's called E-Cumney. Now, it's from what's called the Train Spotting School of British Theatre, in that every second word is a four-letter one. It's very rough, very gritty. It deals with everything, sex, drugs, transvestitism, and everything. But, and no one's heard of the piece or the company, and yet we pretty well sold that out. So it's mad, just from the brochure. I don't know why, but it just reads like it's a little bit different. It's a bit different from Niall Card, maybe.
Yes, people can't get into private life, so we'll go and check out the Welsh swearing show.
But it's really wild. I mean, there's one scene where they get this guy's head and shove it into a toilet and try to drown him and flushing the water over it.
Well, that's what you'll be seeing around day 16 in that Meyer window, obviously.
I think they'll be doing it with the customers.
Really. Leo, we've got you here and we want to talk food. Are you prepared to talk food with us?
I'll talk anything, mate, except sport, because I don't know anything about it.
That'll be next on Barton Molloy. Restaurant critics in the nation. How were those years? Did you get a lot of free meals?
You never got a free meal. The deal always was that you had to pay. And this is surprising because I first worked for the Rupert Murdoch Press.
Oh, yeah.
And used to send in these bills for astonishingly expensive meals, and there was no problem with them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I suppose you could have got a freebie, but then you'd have had to write something nice. And it's far better to have gone and paid for the tucker and then said what you actually thought.
And that got you in trouble from time to time.
Only once. And it was really kind of bizarre. I mean, I just think it was just basically a miscarriage of justice. But apart from that...
As a funny read, all the same.
It was a funny read. But I do think when the father of the plaintiff got up and described how he made his own grappa in the garage, that was the best moment. I mean...
Now, what sort of ego do you have to be a restaurant critic? I mean, I know I couldn't do it.
Have an ego.
Does everyone hate you at the restaurant?
No.
It's like a barroom western scene, isn't it? Everyone shuts up and their heads turn.
It took a while for people to even know what I looked like, but then they started to do witty things when they got a photograph and they'd blow it up and put it behind the door of the kitchen. Then this man walks in, press button A or something.
Do you ever go to McDonald's, Lee?
I've been to McDonald's. I just find the buns are a bit sweet. Just a bit sweet.
When they see you walking in, are they going, bring out the good stuff, the special ones?
It's like the evacuation of Saigon.
The stuff going into briefcases, people are leaving out the back doors, women are grabbing their kids.
The Hamburglar.
He's gone.
The Hamburglar.
And, Leo, we see you out, and you're very high profile, you're very visible. There's always a picture of you in the paper, and you're always immaculately dressed. You're always debonair, very urbane. Well, thank you very much. Which leads to my question, at home when you're on your own, have you got a pair of tracky dacks? I mean, what are you relaxing around the house?
Let me tell you, mainly a dressing gown. It looks like, remember Come Back Little Sheba, where Shirley Booth never got out of a dressing gown before 4 in the afternoon?
I think for dressing gown references on this program, it's best to stick with Hugh Hefner, Leo.
Yeah, I know that. Mine is certainly un-Hefner-like. No, but I do. I've got something a bit like you, what you're wearing now, Mike. I've got a little grey, loose thing, not quite as frayed around the collar.
All right, we'll get together.
A pair of tracky dacks, and they're great. And just the slippers, in fact. Yeah, I feel really cozy.
That's the way to go.
Now,
it?
I've been going back through the resume, Leo, and here's one job that you had at one point. You were on the New South Wales Government Special Advisory Committee on Development at Luna Park. Is that true?
Yeah, and I left that committee because I thought it was heading in the wrong direction.
Really?
Yeah.
What was your vision for Luna Park?
I wanted to retain as much of the historic element as possible, but recognise that one can't turn back the clock to the 40s or the 30s and recreate the atmosphere. There's a lot of things have happened in between, and I saw it as keeping things like the Ferris wheel as big sculptural elements or just as novelties, but using it as large spaces for restaurants, taverns, cinemas and the like. So it became almost an adult park. Uh-huh. But there was a lot of pressure from the nostalgists to hold it in the way they'd remembered it from the time they first went there at 7.
Make it a bit of a museum.
And we all have that memory, but it would not work that way.
What about more basic things, Leo, like making the ghost train scarier? Did you have any ideas in that regard?
Well, I mean, that's a verbatim subject because, as you know, there was a tragic fire in the Sydney ghost train.
Well, I didn't mean that scary, mean on a general level.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, I think you could do all sorts of things. You could arrange, you know...
Pauline Hanson, perhaps, to leap out of...
Sure, yes. And three-fingered gooses for every seat, you know, that you sat on and you leapt out of your seat.
And did you have anything to say about making the aim on those guns at the shooting gallery a bit more accurate? I think there was something...
I think they were modelled on the bananas, the barrels, weren't they? the idea was that you aimed and they went out at about a 45 degree left. I don't think I ever won a thing either from trying to get those cranes to come down on something in the popcorn.
Right, oh yes, that good watch, the digital one.
But it was a wonderful period, but I think it's possible to recreate a lot of that kind of charm and wonder and naivety in a different contemporary way these days.
That's why we have table dancing.
Exactly, yes, yes.
Leo, what next? You've done everything. Is there anything left?
Yeah, so there's a garden I'm working on, and then I'm going back to Sydney to run the Sydney Festival in the 3 years running up to 2000.
Are you going to boot some ass there while you've been away? Have they broken it?
Well, I think it has a potential to make a bigger impact on the town than it has.
Oh, okay. Well,
isn't that diplomatic?
Well, all the best of luck to you, Leo, with whatever you turn your hand to next.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll see you again. Forgiven, not forgotten. That's the cause here at Martin Molloy. Thanks very much to Leo Schofield for dropping by.
Yep.
But, you know, Mickey, I think enough art. Let's have some showbiz.
It's time for radio's premier talent quest, Pot of Shite. Could you be the next Bindi Paxton, the next Ian Buckland, the next Maria Venuti, Yahoo Serious, or Animal, that drummer who used to be on Hey Hey? Even if you're merely the current Animal, give us a call and let us lead you to the Pot of Shite at the end of the rainbow.
I don't know, if that's what you reckon, I'll go with it.
Every winner on Pot of Shite takes home a 3-pack of CDs thanks to Warner Music and goes into the draw to win a Ford Festiva Trio valued at more than $17,000. Ford Festiva, the escape hatch, fun to drive and easy on the wallet. All thanks to the Ford Australian Open. Okay, lads, stir that pot.
Thanks very much, Pete, and thanks very much, the Pot of Shite Orchestra.
We're back on firmer ground now, aren't we? We've put the art to one side and we're back where we belong.
Mick, I know we've got a fantastic orchestra.
We do indeed.
Who sit in every day for Pot of Shite, but they can't really compare with the Orchestra Royale.
Oh, yeah.
And who's the man behind the Orchestra Royale? It's Frank Bennett, and he's with us today. Give him a round. Okay. How are you, Frank?
Very well, thank you. Thank you, Tony. Yes, great to be here. Loving the weather.
Now, Frank, we first became familiar with your work with that fantastic single you did of Creep. How did that go for you?
I did very well, thank you very much. It put my name right up the top there where it belongs, and I'm feeling very comfortable now, thank you.
Right, and what about, I know Dave Graney, he was the man who brought you to our attention. Have you been touring with Dave? How's that been going?
Well, Dave's been recording a lot lately, and we just finished up our own album, the Orchestra Royale and myself. But Dave's off finishing his album in England, and last time I saw Dave, he was getting mopped up off the floor of the Siebel.
Oh, yes.
At the Aria Awards.
In the Ricky May bar?
In the Ricky May bar.
Oh, yeah. Now, Frank, have you had much to do with judging talent shows?
No, I have appeared a lot.
But no judging at all?
No, I haven't. No, this is my first time.
Well, that's perfect for this segment. It's
look at you, Frank. You're a lounge lizard. I'm betting you're deadly with the ladies. Am I right? Am I wrong? Look at him go.
Babe magnet. Shite magnet.
All right. Well, we'll see if you can draw the shite out of our listeners. If you want to call us up and impress us with your talent, people, and indeed impress Frank, who's going to be judging today Bernard King style on the pot, give us a call, 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Molloy, brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment.
Hey, kids.
It's a swinging safari today at Martin Molloy. It's Pot of Shite, and sitting in we have, well, one of the nation's foremost crooners, Frank Bennett. How are you, Frank? Comfy?
Very well, thank you.
Would you like a cocktail?
I'd like a highball.
We'll see what we can arrange. You know, I think
two highballs.
Maybe drinking would improve this segment.
You know, it's worth a shot. A cocker made me plan like that. Just may work.
Now, let's see if we can impress. Well, Frank, at least, as we introduce the pot stirrers, who are they, Mickey?
Well, kicking off today, we're going with a young chap named Mason. How are you, Mason?
Not bad.
That's the way. And what are you going to do for us and Frank today on Pot of Shite?
I'm going to sing the 50 US states and their capitals.
Are you really? Is this an act you've developed over some years, Mason?
Well, just in my spare time, you know, I've just kind of sat down and worked out this song.
Okay, all right, well, we're seeking to be impressed. Take it away, Mason.
Okay. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Columbus is the capital of Ohio. There's Montgomery, Alabama, south of Helena, Montana, then there's Denver, Colorado, and the Boise, Idaho. Texas has Austin, then we go north. Massachusetts, Boston, and Albany, New York. Tallahassee, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Nashville, Tennessee.
One more time! Everybody, join in!
There's more.
No, just the girls.
Dr. Jefferson, Missouri, you got Michigan, Virginia, South Dakota, has Pierre, Harrisburg, and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania and Augusta, South of Maine, and here's Providence, Rhode Island, next to Dover, Delaware.
He's not stopping.
Frank, he forgot Granada.
Something for the new album there, do you feel? You're impressed. Well.
He's beaten the punch on that one, aren't you, Frank?
Okay. Of that one, I think.
And Mason, have you thought of doing it with the states of Australia?
Well,
I don't know. Okay, thanks, Mason. Now we've got Felina. Felina, what are you sitting on? Reshite.
Hello.
Hello, Felina. How are you?
Pretty good.
That's the way. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm a bit of a Jim Carrey nut, so I've got a bit of his favourite lines.
Oh, so you can just cobble them all together, fashion them into some kind of Jim Carrey montage. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Well, off you go then.
Hey, Ventura, pet detective. Smoking. Mark. Yeah, ing, yeah, bird, yeah, somebody stop me. Riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the big black bat? Cable guy, like a glove. So, what are you trying to say? Was that over the top? I can never tell. Thank you very much.
There you go. Did you give us a... What about an all righty then?
All righty then.
Okay. Are you impressed by that, Frank?
I liked it, yep. I recognised every one of those.
Okay.
I used them myself.
And, Felina, were you disappointed when Jim got hitched earlier this month?
Yes, it was very upsetting for me.
Yes, I can imagine. If you'd married him, you would have been able to give him all those lines during the ceremony. Wouldn't that have been fantastic?
Hey, baby, I'm still available.
Yes. There you go. We'll give you Frank's number. Now we've got... Raymond, you're going to boot this thing home. What have you got?
Okay, fellas. Well, I'll give you a choice. You can either hear Amazing Grace to the tune of Gilligan's Island or Gilligan's Island to the tune of Amazing Grace.
Oh, questions. Oh,
I think we'd probably like to hear those Gilligan lyrics, don't you?
Okay.
Take it away.
Now sit right back and hear a tale of a faithful trip that started in the tropicals aboard this tiny ship.
I think we know how the rest goes, Raymond. How long did it take you to nut that out?
Oh, just listening to the TV show once, and I'm thinking, you know, I could fit this in here if I really try.
Hey, just quickly, let's have a go at the other.
Okay.
Let's hear a quick verse of Amazing Grace, okay. Tune of Gilligan's Island.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. I saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found with blind, but now I see.
All right.
Just checking. Raymond, would you, like our first caller, Mason, describe yourself as somebody with spare time? Yes, I'm guessing. All right, Frank, it's up to you.
Gosh, man, it's a tight call, isn't it? Well, I think I'm going to go with Raymond only because of the because it's very close to my own heart.
Yes. And vocal dexterity on display. Okay, Raymond, guess what? You've won, and that means the 3-pack of CDs is coming your way.
Woo!
Yes, and of course you're going into the draw for the Trio, the Ford Festiva Trio. That's a vehicle, a $17,000 vehicle, courtesy of the Ford Australian Open. We're drawing it in less than 5 weeks.
Can you do that prize read to the tune of Gilligan's Island? Is it too much to ask?
No.
You've won a 3-pack of CDs featuring the Doors. The Doors? The Doors? What's that doing in
there? There you go. Chuck it out.
Never happened. Okay, the Doors apparently in there. All right, and thanks for taking part, everybody. Frank, I think you've obviously seen the standard we've set. have you got a tune for us? Are you going to take us out with a tune your own self?
Well, I've got a Pearl Jam song that I'd love to do. That's very close to my heart. And,
Pearl Jam? Which number is it in particular?
It's Better Man.
Better Man. And this is your new single. You're going to perform it live in the studio for us today with the full Orchestra Royale. Here he is, Frank Bennett. This has been Pot of Shite.
waiting, watching the clock. It's 4 o'clock, it's got to stop. Tell him, take no more. As she practices her speech as he opens the door, she rolls over, pretends to sleep as he looks her over. She lies and says she's in love. There's no one else who needs to know. Tells herself memories when she was smooth as stone. Waiting for the world to come along. Swears she knew him. Now she swears he's gone. She lies and says she's in love with him.
Very much Frank Bennett and his Orchestra Royale performing Pearl Jam's Better Man here at Martin Malloy. And, you know, you might think that that's as good as it gets on this show with regards to tunes and singing.
Yep.
You'd be dead wrong.
Here it is, the album event of the year, the one you've been waiting for. Mick Malloy, The Bathroom Sessions.
Come alive! Yeah!
Chock-a-block with all your favourites. This is the most eagerly awaited release on the musical calendar, featuring some of the most haunting melodies of our time.
And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much. I wanna hold you, girl, and let this be.
Nominated for 5 ARIAs, this album delivers hit after hit, including the new single. Mick Malloy's gone back into the bathroom to re-record some of the all-time classics.
Why do you build me up, buttercup baby, just to let me go, let me go? Why do you do it? Wait,
remember this?
Knowing me, knowing you.
Do yourself a favour and grab a copy of Mick Malloy, The Bathroom Sessions. This one's going all the way to the top.
If I were a rich man, I would bitty, 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 bums. All day long I...
Would you shut up?
Bitty, bitty, bum, if I were a wealthy man.
KFM, now playing better music variety from the 70s, 80s and...
Chisels.
Just a little chisels for
forever now. Here
I'll let that one go through.
Martin Malloy, time for us to sign off, I'm afraid. And I'm having a look at what's on TV tonight, Mickey, and I think I'm going through Murder One withdrawal.
Oh, aren't we all?
I mean, no more Teddy.
No more Teddy. No more Teddy ever. They replaced him for the second series.
Yeah, and look what's on. Channel 9's got Wycliffe. What is that?
Wycliffe.
Ever heard of Wycliffe?
No.
That's, is Wycliffe in the Howard cabinet? Haven't heard of him.
He could be.
Savannah. What is Savannah? What is that?
It's some new hoity-toity kind of Dallas stroke. No, have I got it wrong?
Oh, it's
yeah, some kind of soap opera set in lots of southern accents.
Here's what I've just said. Mick started to explain it, and he said, have I got it wrong, looking over at Gracie, who was putting his fingers down his throat.
Oh.
Does that constitute a television review?
I think it does on this program.
I don't know what to do. I'll just have to...
know the only person they could possibly replace Teddy with?
Who's that?
Bert Newton.
Oh, yeah.
I've been thinking about it all weekend, though, because I've been trying to come up with a better plan, and that's the only person who springs to mind.
Or Meatloaf, perhaps.
Meatloaf.
If he's getting any trouble in court, he can just...
Question himself.
Get abusive. Get a bit like... I don't know if people have heard about this, but bulky rock singer Meatloaf was restrained by police. Doesn't say by how many. Mm. How many would it take to bring down Meatloaf?
The squadron.
A van load. After he became violent and abusive at Melbourne Airport. Because his manager wasn't allowed to take Meatloaf on as hand luggage. I understand that's what caused the trouble. It was going well till they tried to get him through that metal detecting conveyor belt kind of a deal. He was banked up. There were 75 suitcases.
You know how usually on flights like that, most kids want to go and see the cockpit? But they just asked them all the hostesses, can we go and see Meatloaf's ass? That was it. They were all going down the other end. You'd feel pretty confident, I reckon, if Meatloaf was on your plane.
Because if it went down, you'd know who to eat. If it got
in trouble, you could dine out in him for years.
And he doubles
or Meatloaf, anyone.
It doubles as a flotation device. But what about... I'm just picturing a cop trying to, you know, restrain Meatloaf. Mm. Would he have to be seriously going, Mr. Loaf, steady on. We'll have to take you down the station, Mr. Loaf. I don't know. Let's go. And we must thank our guests, Leo Schofield and Frank Bennett, all of our gladiators and contributors to Pot of Shite. Tomorrow we'll be joined by a fully rejuvenated and ready to go Judith Lucy. Until then, remember, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.
Martin Malloy is a misguided production in association with half-baked ideas and ill-conceived concepts, Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Coca-Cola, the ultimate summer refreshment. Pete Smith speaking.